Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite AfterBuzz TV after show begins, I'm so excited to tell you that my new cookbook is out. It's called The Every Girl's Guide to Cooking. It's the quickest, fastest, easiest, most amazing recipes for kitchen newbies and chefs alike. Please check out MariaMenounos.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, AfterBuzzers. Welcome to another episode of The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, Season 1, Episode 7, titled Conspiracy Theories. Welcome to the after show. My name is Pegarad. You can find me on Twitter, at Pegarad. I am joined by my lovely co-host.
Hey, everyone. I'm Stephanie Georgie. You can follow me on Twitter, at Stephanie Georgie.
I'm Shaka Smith. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Shaka Strong.
And Chris Howard, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, at Chris Howard Live, also at LegendaryLivingDaily.com, as well as LegendaryLivingTV.com.
Awesome. Before we get started, make sure to go onto iTunes, give us 5 stars. We have all of our episodes on there. Find us on SoundCloud, give us 5 stars. I already said that, so just give us 5 stars.
What do you want them to do?
We want 5 stars.
Oh.
Subscribe to our channel on YouTube, leave us comments. We read them all, so thank you for those. What do you guys think about this episode? Initial thoughts?
Ooh, so good. And actually, speaking of those comments, I'm going to try something different instead of the tweeting at hashtag ABTV. ACS, I'm going to try to be on the chat roll. So if any of you are watching live, then you want to say something, let me know.
That's intense. Cool. It's like the episode.
Yeah. Okay, well, so intense.
Let's go on that. Yeah.
Well, we did have an update, and I just read this funny tweet. If the knife is rusted, I can't be busted.
Oh, wow. Oh, my.
So we got an update, at least through TMZ, that's reporting that the knife they found that was rusted over 20-odd years, they had no DNA. But that's through TMZ, so we'll wait till get some official word. But I thought that was an interesting little update to the case.
You know, I saw a stat that said that more people believe TMZ than Fox News.
They've been consistently right on a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I don't blame them.
Harvey's got his stuff. He's got his stuff going.
He's a pretty cool dude. I like Harvey.
So speaking of celebrity. Curious about a celebrity boyfriend's midlife crisis?
Yeah, tell me more.
Enjoy hearing stories about behind the scenes of Hollywood?
Yeah.
Amused by old TV and movie references?
Definitely.
Then you'll love The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. Join AfterBuzz creator and Maria Menounos' fiancé, Kevin Undergaro, along with AfterBuzzer co-hosts Roxy Stryer, Ashley Daniels, and others for all of the insanity. Watch Monday and Thursday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time on thetomorrowshow.com or subscribe and download free on iTunes. Go to thetomorrowshow.com. For more information.
Awesomeness. Cool. They just got engaged.
Yes. So, congrats to them.
Hey, shout out to our chat roll. Okay, I see y'all. Let me get a Chuck Williams, Yessi Casares, who else? JF and Bonkini Head? I think, but go ahead. Let's go.
All right, guys. So we start out with Gil Garcetti and Robert Shapiro. They are in the courthouse, and we kind of see the beginning of the tension building up with Gil being upset that Shapiro, the whole LAPD thing with Mark Furman. So it's kind of a rocky time because LAPD is just recovering from the whole Rodney King situation.
Yeah. Exactly.
And here they are again in the public eye putting the LAPD down. Thoughts?
Yeah, it was Shapiro's. This was a great episode for Travolta, you know, about that character.
So good.
This was him really walking that fine line of being this guy that had kind of greased the government. He knew all the players. You know, he was the local attorney that kind of knew everybody. And so he was trying to walk that fine line of keeping that side of his group happy and being, you know, OJ's attorney for this case. And I think you saw that whole tension kind of play out with him trying to walk both lines. You can't. You have to be very zealous for your client, regardless of your own kind of personal reputation amongst your friends and family members. So
absolutely. I agree. And it was nice to see John Travolta, because I keep focusing on that because people keep making comments on his acting.
Yeah.
And I liked that I didn't, this was very different of me. This is the most we've kind of seen out of it from him, not just being the lawyer, but kind of getting defensive and then trying to defend himself and then just being all over the place. So it was great.
That was interesting. It's interesting to get the inside view of what was happening there because I remember the situation as it was rolling out. But here I'm getting a different perspective from, you know, from their portrayals. So I think that's really cool.
And just the way he holds his face, you know, it's so
Those piercing lips. Get out of here with that.
He must have, like, to get a massage after every day on set. but he's so good at it. You forget it's John Travolta. You get lost in that character, right? But he's so good at having that affectation.
He is so good. And I was just periscoping before this, and a lot of the viewers were like, what's wrong with his face? Like, it looks like he's just maybe, I don't know, injected up.
But I like
up
that because it's not him. He's acting. Like, and he sticks there. He doesn't move from it, so it's just good.
There's a bit of an air of arrogance to it. So he has his nose is up a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is, because I had mentioned before that I met Bob Shapiro just before we started the show. So I went to his office and sat down with him. And this gives me a deeper insight and view to who he was as an individual and who he is as an individual. So I've grown to respect him more through watching the show.
Are the mannerisms the same between him and Travolta?
You know, he was a little bit softer when I saw him than Travolta is. Travolta holds that staunchness in his face.
So maybe when he was younger, he might have had
that. Yeah, maybe. He seemed a little bit more relaxed. He was a little bit more gaunt, too. He lost some weight, so you know, he's probably been through hell and back. And,
yeah, sure.
but I gained some respect.
We jump across the U.S. to Harvard University, where Dershowitz is teaching a class.
Yeah.
I love that part.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and just like what you said, like, I would have been blown away being a student to watch a fax go in on live television and have it work in this big trial. It's crazy. So his whole point was to provide a narrative that doesn't involve your client. Do you think he did a good job of doing that?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, it just was another thing for the jury to hold up. And I think we see a little bit later where Marcia thinks a lot of that stuff is nonsense, but it's landing. The point is, who cares if it's nonsense? If it lands and it works with the jury, that's what you're supposed to do on behalf of your client.
Exactly. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to think that the jury, you don't know their educational background. You don't know what they know and how they're going to view things. So the matter, it's a matter of their own perspective and how they're going to receive it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was great. And also, I loved that. I mean, talk about being a boss teacher when you're let me teach you something right now.
How brilliant his legal mind was to think and boom, just go.
And to just do one thing. Yeah. And that was how brilliant it was between both of them. That was the only message he needed to send. And then
and he
understood.
Knew exactly what to do.
If he didn't prompt their imagination down a certain path, it could go any place. Yeah. And so that leading of the imagination, and what it reminded me of was the Stephen Avery case where they weren't allowed to do that. They were told, you're not allowed to provide a different narrative other than what the than what the prosecution's putting forward, which is a big hindrance in a court case. I don't know how they do that.
Prosecutors probably have learned that lesson. If you can limit that scope, you know, to plausible explanations as to what happened, you know.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to Johnny. Oh boy. So he's sitting there and he sees on TV two of his exes, Patricia and Barbara, doing a TV interview. And she comes out with the question of, you know, we know about your violence.
Spousal abuse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he loses his mind, and rightfully so. Here he is trying to defend this guy, and all of the stuff comes out.
Crazy. And it's like, and it's his personal life as well, and his wife. So, I mean, so we think, and so we know that he's happy with her and everything. So that's just, oh, man. It's just so contradicting, too.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's unbelievably contradicting, and so I would have been I feel like I would have been scared also if I was him.
Yeah, but here for me, I'm calling him like Teflon John, you know?
He was so good, right? John!
Yeah, he was so good. He handled the media well. I mean, I didn't follow this case closely when it was happening, but I didn't recall this at all. I had no idea there was even this scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it shows you just how well he was media savvy at that point.
Absolutely.
See, I can admire his skill, and still I look at it and I go, I don't respect, you know, the whole, and it's, I know the legal system and how you have to do right by your client and stuff, but the way that they twist things, I'm not a fan of that whatsoever. I don't like it. I don't like the lying. I don't like the misleading, but he is a skillful lawyer. Yeah. And she called him out on it when she said, you asked for this, Johnny. This is what you wanted. You wanted to be in the spotlight. Remember, Marcia she was naked in the you know, had pictures of her nude posted and stuff. So they
at
all
least
got
he,
it.
I mean, at
they
least he knew how to handle it. Real quick to go back on Shapiro, we had a comment here on the chat roll by JF. He said in an interview with Barbara Walters after the trial, Travolta and Shapiro have almost the exact same mannerisms.
Okay.
So it's nice to know that. I mean, because I haven't seen them together, right?
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think some people assume Travolta was his take on the character, but no, it was his. He was mimicking kind of Shapiro and how he behaves.
Yeah,
I love that so much. So the cops go over to Nicole Brown Simpson's house to go rummage through her things, and they find receipts and credit card statements from Bloomingdale saying that the gloves were bought there by Nicole. So huge thing that they found out.
Okay, I have to be honest, I was a little bit confused as to why it was such a big deal that she bought them.
Because we don't know where the glove came from. So the glove could be someone else's. It doesn't have to be OJ's necessarily.
Okay.
Now we know that the glove found was a glove
from the
that
house.
She had bought.
Right.
So we know that this glove in question belongs to OJ or is very likely to belong to OJ.
Mm-hmm. Okay, heard. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, remember they said before that the gloves were extra large because they brought in some mock gloves the small one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we couldn't find the extra large. So when OJ tried those suckers on, they were extra large gloves. You know, we know all the things
those
that happened in the episode.
Gloves,
but that's the size of a hand that would fit that size of a glove.
Right.
That's insane. So they think they have it in the bag. And we'll get back into that again later.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Marsha and Darden for a little.
Yeah.
Aww. She wants a vacation.
Is that really what she wanted?
This part's difficult because, like we were saying, you know, we don't really know what happened. And, you know, so it's by word of mouth. And at the same time, it's not a good look for them. But I can definitely imagine, you know, again, Darden being attracted to this woman who's like, she, what's she call him? Big man? Big boss? Boss lady.
Oh, boss lady.
Boss lady.
Wow.
No, I mean, but like in a joke, like, shut up, guys. Okay, so, but anyway, so he calls her that, and I could see the attraction there. And then the same thing with Marsha, to see, you know, him kind of flattering her and being there for her emotionally, which, let's be honest, is something that she kind of needed, or so it looked like.
Totally needed.
And then, but for me, it was a bummer to see that bit of a rejection and then have her reflect on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I definitely think that that's something, I mean, I think I probably would do the same thing.
You just wanted them to go in the room is what you wanted.
I was like, I wanted her to be happy, but it didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought it was cool to see Chris Darden stepping up and taking on an air of confidence and he became more assertive than he was in some of the other episodes. And you've seen it rising in him to his detriment later on in this episode.
Sorry, that's probably mine.
Yeah, to his detriment later on, but it was cool to see him stepping up and taking some, some masculinity and taking it by the horns.
Shout out to Angelica Partridge, who she shipped them, Martin.
Oh, Martin.
Marsha and Darden.
I like it.
Oh, Marsha and Darden.
Martin. Very nice. So let's talk about Shapiro. Oh, man, he's starting to, I don't want to say plot, but it sure seems like he is.
Yeah, this was the episode of him walking that fine line, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now he's still trying to keep everybody happy, but in his own best interest and not OJ's. And that was a great meeting that they had where OJ's really, like, cut the shit, really.
Right.
Yeah, well, it is go time. You're either on this team or you're not.
What did you guys think about when he walked into the court wearing the pin on his lapel? Wow.
Again, he was worried about himself.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, guy. What are you, like, you're all over the place. Can we just be focused on this trial?
Yeah.
See, I take a different perspective because it's like he was playing within the rule book of what was feasible, possible, true, real. And I totally get that you got to do what you do for your client. But there's a line that can be drawn or should be drawn in terms of going so far as lying. And making things up and making,
But what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I know, because you're a lawyer. I mean, you come from that background. For me, every call that Shapiro was making was attempting to make was within the boundary conditions of let's do what's
in the
right.
But was it in the best interest of the client? And
well,
that's what the
this, and that's where you get to the,
that's
you know, to
great
do,
point.
That's where you get to lying as a lawyer
you're not allowed to lie as an attorney, but you do have to explore the options that might be in the best interest of your client.
Even if they're outrageous or even if they're, even if you're sitting in a classroom as Dershowitz was saying, hey, let's do this, let's say that. Yeah. That's there's a calculation to that, I suppose that's what happens.
But it does have to be plausible. And when you talk about in that particular case, that police guy was testifying to that they exhausted all avenues, and that's why they honed in on OJ. That was the testimony of the police guy.
But that was bullshit because they hadn't.
And so that's why they had to ask the question, are you aware of what else is going on in the community? Mm-hmm. And if he's not aware of that, then you really didn't exhaust your avenues.
That's true.
I get it.
So if you really did exhaust your avenues, you would have looked briefly into the Colombian necktie and see if it had anything to do with the drug cartel and dismissed that as part of a...
And that was a possibility. I mean, there was a real possibility of that.
So I think what they were saying is you didn't get to see who else might have done this because you didn't look. You only looked at one person.
And that's a truth. And that's a reality.
And that's why you have to bring up other scenarios to say, did you look at the Colombian necktie? Mm-hmm. Did you look at this? Did you look at that?
Absolutely.
And if you said no, then what did you look at?
Right.
And so that was the point.
If I was fresh on this case, I think that's something that I would totally be like, yeah, that's not fair at all. And just because he lives in Brentwood doesn't mean that, again, if I was arguing for OJ and I was, you know, whatever, against it, but I would just say that, you know, you don't know what she was into or what he was into or what that could have evolved into, especially with those who have money and are capable of purchasing drugs and stuff like that.
Whenever you testify to something, it can be impeached.
Right.
And so the testimony was, we exhausted every avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then he and used that testimony to show you didn't exhaust every avenue.
Yes, exactly.
See, what I'm fascinated by is Stephanie's point of view, because she because you're edgy and you've got that kind of ghetto point of and I don't mean it. Did you snort again?
I did.
But you got that kind of view, like, and I appreciate it because it's like, who knows if they have money, if they planted things and stuff. And it's that's a reality. That's a perspective. Mm-hmm. I get that perspective. So I appreciate it in this case because it's not necessarily the same perspective that I came from. So it's like, you know what I mean?
No, I came at it like that, but only because that may have been a possibility. That's why I would have said, like you said,
because they weren't
you didn't look at everything. That's not fair.
They weren't offering to say, this is what happened.
Right.
They were offering to say, what did have you look at?
Right, exactly. And this is why I came to this conclusion.
Yeah.
Because I looked for everything else and I was trying not to accuse someone that I may have looked up to.
I guess it's the gamesmanship behind the scenes where they're egging, you know, where they're egging Darden on and they're saying, hey, you know,
that's gamesmanship. If
playing psychology.
You certainly want them to introduce evidence that's going to help your client.
Yeah, absolutely.
If the other side wants to introduce evidence, that's going to help your client, of course.
I get it. Ultimately, I'd like to see the truth weigh out.
Right.
And that doesn't that doesn't always weigh that way with the justice system.
I do think in this particular case, if the prosecution presenting evidence that this is the glove the killer wore, having the killer try on that glove is searching for the truth.
So it's okay. It's just a bummer that it wasn't true. Because after Marsha did that entire, like, with the shot glasses, I'm sorry, that was really great.
I love that. Are we on that scene?
Well, we're getting there very soon.
Okay.
Very soon. One, two, three.
Somebody's got to keep structure.
So real quick, so Shapiro goes to Kardashian and suggest that they cut a deal again.
Yeah. This part's so scary to me.
What a scumbag to me. To me, what a scumbag a guy was.
Oh, yeah, because he was a manipulative, like, prick. Like, are you kidding
me? That was him trying to go, can I watch out for myself and be OJ's lawyer? Mm-hmm. That's what he was trying to do.
Right.
See, I don't see it the same way. It's just weird. It's like, I get what you're saying. I really do understand. It's just that I feel like he's playing within the boundary conditions of what's right.
What do you think his...
Because if the guy's ultimately... Well, if the guy's guilty...
Wait, but see, that's the point. When it's your defendant, and you have no evidence that he's guilty, he is innocent until proven guilty.
And that's the problem with...
And your job is to keep them from proving
guilty. That's why I say the problem with the judicial system is that if you got enough money... And that's why I brought up the thing with Stephanie. If you got enough money, they can plant things. They can do things like that. Mm-hmm. They can manipulate the narrative such that would make you look guilty.
Yeah.
You know, how would you like to have a dream team against you?
Yeah, so that's why you have... the equal counsel for you so that you have a balance.
That's rarely equal.
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't like... My thing was... If I was Rob Kardashian, I would have punched him in the face. And was like, you know what? Let's not talk more because that part pissed me off. I'm like, what are you doing right now? Because
that was the same gamesmanship.
The conflict of interest. It was I get that. But we're in a private room right now and we're on the same team. So why don't you talk to me like a man and let me know what you're trying to get out of
me. He was intimidated.
And that's why I think you don't see that Shapiro is operating in anyone's best interest, at least in that moment, but for himself. Because not only are you saying you believe OJ did it, you have a strong belief that Rob Kardashian knows and is covering up for him with knowledge.
I get it.
At least to all our evidence, was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So just because he has a belief about something, if he's operating on that belief, it could be incorrect, and now you're you know,
yeah. He would have to dismiss himself as counsel for that person if it was...
And he's implicating Kardashian and what's a cover-up.
It just sucks, and I just hated to see... I mean, how... Man, I feel a lot for Rob Kardashian.
So much.
Oh, because it's just so sad. Another, but earlier there was a comment again by the commenter JF. He said that Ross, David Schwimmer was a badass in this, that he forgot that he was Ross.
Yeah. He was dreaming. Was great. He was dreaming.
inside joke.
So Rob, of course, has to go and find the garment bag that's still at his house and find out what is in it. So AC Cowlings is there. And that part where he's starting to zip it up in my heart.
I was just going to say that. So much tension. But there was also tension between AC and Rob for a moment, like, who's the better friend at this moment? And so that was really scary because I almost felt as if Rob was intimidated for like a second, the way AC was looking at him, like, what are you trying to say? You know, like...
Oh, well, there's that doubt again. The doubt of all enormous amount of evidence. And he's seriously doubting.
To me, he was a true lawyer on the team who was kind of trying to do what's right, but also was trying to defend his friend.
Sure.
And you see that moment of real doubt.
And the conflict within himself.
And
he knows him.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, he knows him as much as he said he would have never done that. It's one of those things where privately amongst friends... When people fight, you see that anger. You see that temper.
And I think you see with Rob Kardashian an assumption that the longer this plays out, the real killers will be found.
Sure.
He probably thought that there's so much media attention. If OJ didn't do it, that eventually some evidence will come to light to show that there are other people that were definitely involved.
So that was his blind faith in the beginning. And then he's like, where's the narrative? Where's the real killer?
And he wasn't seeing a real plausible narrative for himself. And I think that's where you see that doubt come into play.
So well played, though, by Schwimmer. Scene was great. So Shapira goes and visits OJ in jail. And he is skeptical. And he's like, what are you up to? I'm surprised he didn't kick him off the defense team. If you're that skeptical, is there a contract? Like, how does that work?
Well, no, I think he had a history with him. He could have kicked him off, right? He could have fired him right in there.
Yeah.
But I think he's must have had a history. And Shapiro did bring up, he was the one to mention conspiracy. He was the one to take that tack. He was the one to get Johnny. But in the beginning, we saw that, at least from our point of view that they showed us, was that he was doing it in order to push the plea deal, to kind of scare the prosecution into, you know, let's plea this one out.
Absolutely.
And it kind of backfired, you know?
Yeah, because he had already made the assumption that OJ was guilty, even though he wasn't saying
it. He wasn't ready to be zealously representing him with the dream team he was helping to assemble, which was so bizarre because he was helping to push these pieces in place.
Absolutely.
Right. The funny thing, though, not funny, it's not nothing about it's funny, but it's how far-fetched the narrative got. Because, I guess there was something that could have been made about Faye Resnick and her drug connections and that type of thing. But they just went out and it seemed like they were picking out of the ethers what they were going to make up and throw out there. And that's where I have the challenge. It's like, come on, really? Yeah.
Well, I personally didn't see so much of that, but you were like living in it and you saw it as it was happening.
Well, even I'm seeing here where they're saying, okay, well, let's see the facts. What did you about a Columbia necktie?
Yeah.
It was almost as if they were grasping for straws and then making as much reality around that, weaving as much reality as they possibly could. And
I think what happens is they weren't saying that's what happened, but it was used as impeachment testimony to impeach their testimony that they exhausted the thing. So once they open that door, you have to go, what hallways did you go down? And you have to mention the hallways. But all of those hallways were things that were taking place at the time.
Totally right. So, and you got a really good, solid point on that.
Yeah, you're not allowed to offer just a theory of what happened. Like, that has nothing to do with your client. It has to be related to the
testimony.
Like
when Rob said, like, I went through every possible thing. Like, who else could it have been?
Yeah, just like with Furman, we saw...
But none of them did. They all rushed to OJ. Yeah.
Well, for instance, what we saw with Furman and the N-word. So now the defense isn't put on their case yet. But what you'll see is when the defense, they're going to bring in impeachment witnesses to say, oh, he did say this at this point in time. He did say that. But that would never come into play if he didn't first offer it in his testimony saying, I never used the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
So now they can bring in other people and evidence to show that he did. So it's impeachment testimony, you know?
They become much smarter about the way they do things now, where they say, there's no comment right now.
Yeah,
this person's not a suspect.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to do more with Furman, because do they ever go into his house? God, I wish they would get like a shot of those medals be like, you did it.
You know that they brought in a witness to say they observed the medals. Or they, right. You know, so I guess we'll see some of that in the later episodes.
Gosh.
Three more.
Three. Yeah. I know. It's going
sad.
By.
I'm so sad.
So Marden.
Yeah. Marsha
and Darden. Marden.
Oh, that's official. I didn't get that.
It's official. Yeah.
Marden.
Marden are in Oakland.
Yeah.
And they're visiting his boys. It's his friend's birthday.
Relaxing a little bit.
Yeah. And Stephanie, you wanted to say something about the shots.
Scene. That's you know, the way it was nice for her to kind of summarize the entire thing again. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to lie. From the beginning, we all had an idea or thought we all did it, right?
Yeah.
But for the sake of the show, we're not trying to say who did it or who didn't do it, but give you conversation, give you discussion about this entire case. Especially from like a younger perspective, if you will. But
I'm the old guy.
Yeah. Chris, we know. I'm playing.
Shade.
I know, I'm playing. But
whatever.
But it was just nice to see all of that said again, because why can't you just recap that in court?
In the courtroom, I thought what her strongest defense, and we haven't really seen it until she's in the bar having a couple shots.
On his side.
It's true.
In his defense,
say
the story that way. Just because, you know, the power of sarcasm, man,
right.
It makes you feel stupid quick. Yeah. So you're like, all right, you're right.
And it was her need in that moment to like dispel the nonsense that she sees. But she won't do it in court because she thinks it's nonsense and let's not pay attention to it.
Exactly.
But just in this
overconfidence
bar setting,
though, that's the
Well, she just felt like the jury. She had a very big disconnect.
She's trying to
with
be professional, and in that moment, she wasn't being professional. She was
being like, "Let me show you what it would require."
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It was so utterly ridiculous, and that really truly is what she should have done in the courtroom. But then there's also performance anxiety and that type of stuff that enters into play, and you gotta have it right and proper, and you know, when you're doing shots in the thing, it's not.
But I thought that was like, you know, I would have taken that into the courtroom.
Me too. I was like, damn, point in case. All right. Yes.
What did she call him? Conspiracy theorist or something? She titled them.
This like these professional,
well-trained or something. Yeah.
This cobble of
guys. Yeah.
See, the problem is that it is possible that there was planting of evidence, and still he did it. You know, that is possible.
Yeah, of course,
And with Furman's past and everything, all of that is possible. And that type of stuff, you know.
Okay, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Meaning, he covered it up, but they're like, no, we needed.
We need a little more. Let's drop the glove.
And I think that's what the defense was saying, is that let's just first prove that they tried to frame a guilty man.
Mm-hmm.
And then how easy is it to move from there to going, they tried to frame who they thought was a guilty man. And,
right.
You know,
they did one thing, they could have done it all.
Yeah. And so I think that was a very brilliant defense strategy of creating that timeline and adding that kind of.
So Darden walks Marsha to her hotel room. And the tensions build. We think that he's going to go in. And they just stare at each other awkwardly for, it felt like eternity.
Yeah. I wish they had some artistic license, right? Because everyone wanted to see that kiss. We wanted to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, were they licking their lips? Like, it felt like they were
No, but you two ladies were. We were.
Well, because there's just something about their chemistry that's awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I just wish he would have done a little, because they could have stopped after the kiss.
Yeah.
They didn't have to go all the way. She didn't have to invite him in his room, but like, just figure out what's, get that out of the way.
Yeah.
But the next day or the next time they're at work, you could just tell how she's snippy with him and
short.
Exactly.
She's but in her defense also, I could see like, okay, that got about as far as it should have ever gotten.
Yeah.
And we can't let it get there again.
And the worst is she was kind of snippy over something she should have been snippy about. So, but from his aspect, he doesn't know if she's snippy because of what happened that weekend or if it's because he really is pushing this try on the glove thing too hard.
True.
If it's really just a dumb idea.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird because the masculinity is coming out in him, and he's like, hey, woman, come on over here. You know, he's playing this role. And then all of a sudden that masculinity gets knocked and he's like, wow, he feels off balance.
Well, because normally when he walks into her office, she says to shut the door and she said, no, leave it open.
Yeah.
So already that's changed
setting
a little
the tone.
Bit.
It's an ego blow to him.
Yeah.
To her.
To everybody.
Well, both.
Right,
now,
to both.
Yeah, because now in the workplace, she's like, I'm the boss, and here's what happens. Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah, he wants to have OJ try on the glove. And she's like, why? We have this in the bag. There's no reason to. It could go wrong.
Yeah, and the worst is I think he was right, but for this moment. This entire time, they should have been doing things that caught the jury's attention. Because what we forget is we're watching, you know, that day. You know, we're not watching the 8 months of trial or whatever many months of just boring, slogging. You know, the jurors are falling asleep.
Yeah.
And so what the prosecution wasn't doing was keeping them awake, whether it's fantastic theories or whatever it is, demonstrations. And so he finally was doing what he should do. It just was the wrong moment.
Yeah, and you saw him, you saw the jury sleeping on his watch when he was up there standing. And I mean, figuratively, they were sleeping. As a professional presenter, because I've done seminars for years and years, you've got to keep them awake. You've got to make impressions in their consciousness because they're going to go out taking one or two things. And it's like, keep it simple, drive it in. And anchor it into their consciousness so they walk out there going, oh my God, then that's the one thing that they remember. That's the one take home.
Yeah.
And so it's those demonstrations, it's the things that keep them up.
Yeah. I would have fallen asleep with the quickness.
With the quickness.
I would have been like,
oh yeah.
Like so bad.
Oh my God, that cracked me up.
A lot of what you don't see is, you know, the prosecution establishing just, you know, people's records and how long they've been in the industry, how long have they been a police officer, what have they seen? It gets boring, and you're doing days and days of testimony.
They were there for 6 months or something like that. Well, they're going to be there for, yeah.
So there's so much that you can miss as a juror, so keep them awake. So you're really playing a psychological game when it comes to being an attorney, especially for a long case like this one.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So the court's adjourned, they have a little break, and Shapiro walks right up to the gloves. I mean, how did A, nobody see?
Yeah.
B, that's definitely not allowed, right? Yeah. You can't.
To be tampering with the evidence. Right.
Absolutely not,
Because they focus in on the cop sitting there with all the evidence envelopes and he's like watching them, but the gloves are up on the podium and nobody's
seeing. That's what's so weird. Yeah. Right when that happened, I looked at Shaq, I'm like, is he allowed to do that?
Yeah, typically when you have those exhibits, especially if it's like from the crime scene, they're handling it with like gloves and
care. And so he just picked it up and put his hand right in there.
I couldn't believe
it. But I had that moment of like, it's Bobby Shapiro finally coming through. Is he coming through of for course. OJ?
I mean, at least we see his wits and his the intelligence that he has and why he is where he's at.
Well, it was all about self-preservation. It took him, OJ, going, you're going to be off the team if you don't get with it, for him to go, okay, I'm going to step my game up.
Well, here's a question. I don't know if you know, but what would have been the repercussions if they did see him touching it? Would they have thrown out that evidence?
I don't know if the evidence would have been thrown out, but the judge might have like censured him or done something to him personally. I doubt they would have thrown out the evidence in that case.
Okay. So he goes over to the defense team. He's like, you guys, we have to have OJ try these on. Yeah. They're too small.
And it's like, how do you trust him in that moment? Because he's kind of been thwarting you at every turn.
Uh-huh.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. Is he trying to force us to plead with them if it fits?
I wonder if he actually tried them on or if he had just like had a visual of it and could tell.
I mean, they've been so close to the true story.
He had to try them on first.
Yeah.
No, Shapiro, I mean.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
See, that gives insight, too, because when I was watching the trial back in the day, I didn't know that he tried them on first. I just remember OJ trying to get him on and doing what everybody said was an acting job of not being able. And that the trial was won and lost in that moment.
Of course.
That was it.
Yeah, of course.
So, Darden's still going up to Marsha in court saying, do we have to do this? And she's like, that's where she gets
shuts him down.
Yeah. She's like, this is my case. You work for me. Like, there will be no glove trying.
That's so smart, too, her reasoning. She said, you never put a demonstration in the hands of the defense because exactly that could happen. So her logic was spot on.
And it's so funny because I remember, I thought it was Marsha's idea to try to put those gloves. Mm-hmm. She really was kind of... You know,
she knew better.
Yeah, she got so much heat after that case that I assumed it was her.
She's been hesitant to go blaming also, I think. Yeah, because she doesn't want to lay it all on him and make it about him. Yeah.
But the fact that the defense was able to...
Goad him into it, yeah.
Right? And make them ask for it was so clever and awesome.
Yeah.
Clever and awesome. And also, if I was like Darden, I'd be like... Damn, did I just get suckered right now? Are you kidding me? Like,
do you think it was that apparent?
He got played super hard.
Well, yeah, because when Johnny looked at him.
The minute Johnny says no objection, then he knows he's
But also when Bailey came up and said, that you have.
Oh, you have the balls the size of a pigeon or something, yeah.
No, like a stud mouse or something. Yeah. Stud balls of the size of a mouse or something, and
if you don't it's have like, to try them on, we will.
Right,
and that's the challenge of the masculinity again. He'd already been knocked by Marcia. Now
that's just annoying, though.
Or the head game in that scenario.
And then Effley Bailey was magnificent, knowing how to play that.
Yeah.
And hitting him where it hurts.
And it was brilliant because if he tries them on, the prosecution presents it and it fits. You still have this narrative that the prosecution and the police are against you. If you, the defense, put him up to have him try him on and they fit, there's no. Then you lose that power, that narrative. This is all coming from a big, larger setup. Right.
Darden was hoping that he could have them see the murderer with the gloves on, but it was really a no win. And
he tries both of them on. He tries to fit. I didn't know he went through so many demonstrations to show that it couldn't fit.
Well, once. I was happy that Darden at least did that. I was like, I hope they didn't just leave it at that. Like, make him move around or something.
Darden was working, though. He was desperate at that point. He was trying to look cool. But
I would have. Marsh's face was like white. Like,
when he grabbed the marker, I'd have been like, you see, he could have held a knife.
But he was holding it all like flimsy. It was weird. What was I going to say? Oh, the way that they showed it. You know, with the, it looked filming? Like we were watching it on TV back in the day. Yeah. I love when they do that. Yeah. It takes me back.
Yeah. It was crazy. A real shot. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I just love that moment of Cuba OJ handing those gloves back to Darden. Like, you saw the elation in the. Yeah. He knew that was the moment.
Right. See, I have such a hard time. Like, I feel bad talking about it the way we are because there's the brilliance in gamesmanship. And then on the other side, there's the bullshit that's being laid down that's going to prevent, in my opinion, justice for these two people that were killed. And it doesn't sit well with me.
But like I said after this episode, the glove thing was so powerful, I would have almost had to see video at this point. Do you know where you just made the case of these are the gloves the killer wore, mm-hmm. and now they're not fitting. I need a real good explanation as to why they're not fitting today in this courtroom to show that he was the one wearing the gloves.
And he had the plastic gloves on underneath. Thing, yeah.
And that was the glove that was found?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see.
But they were extra large. They had shrunk. What they were saying at the time was that the timeout, the cold, the blood, everything, the dried blood had caused the gloves to shrink. And he had this plastic glove on that he was underneath.
That's another thing.
And he's an actor.
But we know they didn't fit. Well, if the Robert Shapiro thing is true, which I'm assuming it is, that he tried them on and they didn't fit, then we know they definitely didn't actually fit. But I don't know how true that is. But what did they shrink? Was there some sort of weather thing, anomaly that made them?
Well, I was going to say, because they look like... But you see, if she got them at Bloomingdale's, those are good gloves. but you have to think about quality, 100%. So it's like one of those things where I'm like, there had to have been like extra blood on it or something.
They weren't Kmart gloves.
Those would have stretched out and they wouldn't have mattered, whereas those gloves would have stayed sturdy and right where they're supposed to be. And leather, usually, if you can get it to stretch out on you, it stays there. No?
Right. Yeah, but my question is, in real life, did OJ actually have latex gloves
underneath?
He had the latex
on underneath, yeah.
Why? I don't understand why that's a thing.
Because it's contaminated. You know, you don't want to contaminate it further than...
Oh, but, okay. Sorry.
I don't know. If you're testing it for size, you would think that...
Because of the friction of the latex, there's no...
Then all the DNA evidence. A layer of something else.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and like you said, the friction of it just, it doesn't slide on.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's crazy. So we're at the end of the episode. Darden calls Fred Goldman to say sorry. Because that's huge. That's a huge revelation. And
I think he knows he lost the case. I mean, they're going to try to press forward. But like I said, once you have that in anyone's mind, the glove that you said the murderer used does not fit him. Oh. It's powerful. And I saw it, and I'm a member of the jury, and I see him try them on, and they don't look to fit.
Everyone was like...
And he's making the fist. He's... Too powerful. It's impossible to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, you see, and then, like, even the faces of OJ's family, they're like, oh, God, good, it wasn't him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Jeez, boy, the power of belief, you know?
Right,
either,
yeah.
Whatever perspective you got, you cling to.
That's so crazy.
Should we get to some news and gossip?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah,
let's do it. AfterBuzz TV News.
So I was reading a couple things. So Kim and Fred Goldman, they were recently on the Steve Harvey show.
What?
Yeah, they did an interview with Steve Harvey. And once again, you know, we have to remember that two people were brutally murdered and to not forget that. And, you know, to no surprise that they're not really excited about this series.
Sure.
They're, you know, this isn't entertainment. These were murders. This was my son. So they just kind of talked about that. And
not only is it his son, but he's been totally overlooked. Oh, the only thing right. people were talking about was O.J. Simpson.
Right. Yeah.
And then Nicole was talked about, but Ron Goldman got, kind of thrown out with the trash.
Exactly. And Fred was saying that so many young people are seeing this series that they're going to take this as what the story is and totally forget who Ron was. So
I mean, I hope that they can someone look at the positive for this, meaning, guess what? His name is still being said and still being heard. It's not like they're saying that he was this, like, scumbag kid who died. No, like, I think he has a good name.
Everyone knows that it's just positively.
Yeah, definitely. Someone that's very unfortunate. It's not like everyone was like, oh, OJ, you know? No, we all have our thoughts on him.
Right.
And it just sucks. But I don't know. Honestly, If Ron Goldman was in LA during that time, 25 years old, as much as this is horrible, I don't think he'd feel too bad, at least, like, you know, how many years later he's still being, you know, talked about.
You got to be careful, though, because, I mean, it really is. It's a human life that's gone. And if you looked at if it was your son.
No, I'm not saying that, because that's horrible.
I hear what you're saying.
I just want to say, I have to be as optimistic as possible and, like, and think that no one really speaks negatively
of Ron Goldman.
Sad thing that is that the focus is not on him when it should be on him.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it would be great if the Goldmans came in to come and chat with us.
I mean, not in the way people that we're talking about.
Well, I know, but do you get a real perspective on it? I mean, it is entertainment, but entertainment, it's based on a real story, and, you know, to hold memories.
That'd be too emotional for me. I personally don't think I'd be able to. Yeah. I literally think I would cry right when I saw them.
Yeah, that is sad.
We said last week that they were awarded $30 million in the civil judgment, and they've not even seen 1% of that. And it only came from having to publish this disgusting book that OJ had written, That was how they had to get the profit. It's sick.
Yeah.
I mean, people have been through hell.
They can't take money from his pension from his house in Florida or something. There's like a law where you can't touch it. Yeah.
A few people are moving there.
So Janae Darden, which is Chris Darden's son, who is now 36, he talks about her being 15 on the show, but she actually, so get this, Marsha actually did go up to Oakland with him.
Oh, okay.
And she met him back during that trip, and they sat down with her mom and Marsha. And they talked about how she's dealing with sexism, and Marsha was telling her to stand up for yourself and hold your own as a woman. And I thought that was really cool.
Wow. Yeah.
So it makes me think, was there something really between her and Darden, or were they really just friends?
Yeah, so, I think that's big unknown.
Yeah. And then she also said that what you see, in Darden, there's music on, and he starts dancing, he's playful. That's really how her dad is. He's just like a really sweet,
I bet.
Cool guy. So that's all the news and gossip I've got. Mm-hmm. Anything else? No? Yeah.
No, but I do have a question on the Steve. Did you watch it or no?
No, I didn't. I just saw a little article. I want to go back and watch.
I watched it. Me too.
Yeah?
That's what I'm thinking about. That's crazy.
Awesome. All right, guys, that's our episode. Where can everybody find you?
You could all find me on Twitter at Stephanie Georgie, on Instagram at TheStephanieGeorgie.
I'm Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shaka Strong.
And Chris Howard at Chris Howard Live. And you can also find me at LegendaryLivingDaily.com and LegendaryLivingTV.com.
And you can find me on all social media at Pegarad. We'll see you next week. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.